Monday. Open wide dev fans.
Get ready
to stuff your face with JavaScript, CSS, node modules, barbecue tips, Git workflows, breakdancing, soft skills, web development. The hastiest, the craziest, the tastiest web development treats. Coming in hot, here is Wes, Barracuda, Boss, and Scott, El Toro Loco, Tolinsky.
Welcome to Syntax, and this Monday, hasty treat, we're going to be talking all about our environment, variables. These are the variables that you use that are often kept as secrets, or maybe they're just some variable information that sticks along with the different aspects of how your application is running, different environments, so to say. My name is Scott Tolinsky. I'm a full stack developer from Denver, Colorado, and with me, as always, is Wes Boss.
The variable master, they call me in high school.
Variable master, disaster, getting it faster, blaster. Okay.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. This episode is sponsored by two of our favorite sponsors over here at Syntax, and that is Sanity and Sentry. Do you want to dig in a little deep on Sanity, and I'll take Sentry, Wes?
Yes. Sanity.io is the structured content CMS. They always change their tagline. I love it on their homepage. You can tell they're constantly tweaking the marketing as well as the actual product.
See the magic.
Yeah, the magic. It's build beyond your expectation. Sanity is the ultimate content platform that helps teams dream big and deliver quickly. They've got Nike and Figma is running on Sanity. That's pretty cool. Movember, Condé Nast, Cloudflare. Basically what it is it's a CMS. You configure it in your code. So what your CMS is can be kept in Git. And then you deploy this thing and you can either host yourself or use Sanity to host it. The backend, this thing is called Sanity Studio, and its entire backend written in React. And if you want to, you can make your own inputs and make your own customization. So it's kind of the best of both worlds because it's a hosted service. It comes with all this amazing stuff out of the box where you can have custom workflows and custom inputs and everything you could imagine. But then if you really want to, you can make your own inputs and make your own workflows and whatnot. So like it really is the best of both worlds. So check it out. Sanity.io/syntax. It's going to get you double the free usage tier. And tweet us what you're making with Sanity. We've had a couple of people do that lately, and it's kind of cool to see what people have built on it.
Sick. This episode is also sponsored by Sentry, and that's at sentry.io. Now, Sentry is the perfect place to track all of your errors and exceptions. We love Sentry over here at Level Up Tutorials and Syntax. That's what I use it on my platform, Level Up Tutorials. And I absolutely could not exist without Sentry. Sentry is the tool that allows me to push with confidence when I know that if there is a major issue going on in the site, I'm going to notice it very quickly because all of my errors and exceptions are logged, cataloged, organized, and even displayed in terms of the frequency and when they last hit and if it was a regression and the GitHub issue attached to it and all sorts of amazing stuff that you want out of an error and exception handling service. It also tracks performance metrics as well, which is something that we definitely love and use. Using the latest, you can see exactly how fast all of your routes on your entire page are loading because as your users are hitting your site, it's sending some of that information to Sentry. It's almost like analytics for performance. It's fantastic. I love it, love it, love it. So head on over to sentry.io. Use the coupon code TASTYTREAT, all lowercase, all one word, and you're going to get 2 months for free of that sweet, sweet Sentry error and exception handling service. Cool. So ENV variables. ENV variables are one thing that can be a giant PIA, and you've been doing a little bit of a deep dive and digging in here. So I'm interested to talk to you about some of your strategies and some of your ideas here, because we've recently redone how we're doing all of our environment variables ourselves. And it's a world. Let's just say that.
Yeah, totally. So what are environmental variables? Environmental variables are variables that are set on the machine that is running your code. And they are often things that are secret. So these are variables that cannot go in your code because they are sensitive in nature and or they change depending on the environment in which they're running in. So things like API keys, IDs for OAuth, database URLs where your database is hosted, node environment, all these things are variables that are based on which environment is it running in. So what are different environments? Well, you have like development when you're running it locally on your machine. You probably want to connect to some sort of test database, and then you push that thing up and you make a pull request, and then you build a preview of that. Maybe that's like a staging environment, and you might have a couple different variables for that. And then when you go to production, there's a whole new set of environmental variables. So these are values that are set on your machine or set via your host. Your host will usually give you some sort of UI to set them. And then when you run your code, you access them. Usually, it depends on which language you're using, but every language out there uses these. They're available at process.env, and this is specifically Node and JavaScript, process.env. Whatever it is, database underscore URL dot GitHub underscore API key dot, even things like base URLs for an API. I'm just working on an API right now, and the API that we hit in development is staging.whatever.com. And then what we hit in production is a just whatever.com. There's no staging on it. So I used to check if we were in the right environment and then set a variable to that. And then I just took it out and said, you know what? I'm sticking the whole URL directly in an environmental variable. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about different types of environmental variables and how they can be set. So at the very basic, you have plain text environmental variables. And usually when you're working locally, you'll have a file that's called a .env or a .env.local, or they have all kinds of different names, but generally it's .env. And this is just a key value file where you stick all of your environmental variables. And then when you run your code, either your framework or via a package, you'll slurp up those environmental variables and they'll be pulled into your application so you can access them like we previously talked about.
Oh, we should mention too that that is explicitly something you should not do is
yes.
Get that into your GitHub repo, especially if your GitHub repo is public. Now, some people would say even in private repos, don't commit them, but we actually commit ours to our private repo because our repo is going to remain private until the end of time and it's not going to ever be public. Now, there's probably a little bit of security concern there, but at the end of the day, I think we're okay with that being as the repo is, you know, everything's locked down, 2FA and whatever. So yeah, for the most part, keep these things out of your repo unless you explicitly know what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah, that's a really, really good point. And even at both GitHub and Google, if you accidentally commit a .env file, and I actually did this when this was intentional, but when I released my advanced React course, I had a .env.sample. Just as like a sample of the values that we're going to use in the course. And I commit that to GitHub because it's like a starter file, right?
Yeah.
And immediately I got an email from GitHub saying, hey, it looks like you accidentally made SMTP credentials public. And as soon as you do that, you must go immediately reset them. If you take it down like 12 seconds later, it's too late. There's bots that are waiting for these types of things to accidentally go public. So you do that. And then another one I got on Friday was when I used to teach the bootcamp, we would do Google Maps examples, and Google Maps API keys used to just be like, whatever, you get one and everybody can see it and it's not a big deal. And still it's the Google Maps API key is still a client side variable, but because I don't know why they emailed me about this, but I had given it to a student and 5 years later, the student put that project up on GitHub. I got an email from Google within 12 seconds of them pushing that commit, which blew my mind. And I was able to log into my Google dashboard and invalidate that key just because now those keys are like Google Maps used to be like you get unlimited requests for free. And now it's like 6 requests for a dollar or something. Like
yeah.
So I thought that was kind of cool. So there kind of is different kinds of environmental variables. There's plain text, which is just text. But there also are encrypted. And I came across this in DigitalOcean's app platform. And then I noticed Vercel also has it now as well.
So does Render.
Oh, Render has it as well. It must be like a standard thing now across the board. Do you want to explain what they are?
So it's basically a field that you're entering into the actual UI of your hosting platform. And that would be obfuscating and encrypting them into their database so that when you run the start scripts or whatever, it will automatically add those environment variables to your process.node or your node process. So that way you don't have to do anything other than implement them in their UI. You don't have to load up an ENV file. And that's what we do for our sites, even for the server or whatever. Our hosting platform has the encrypted values correctly. And then we only use the .env file locally.
Yeah, that's generally how it works with me as well. So I have an ENV file locally, and then on the server, you have your inputs. The encrypting part is pretty cool. I hadn't seen that before. And the idea behind that is that if somebody does get access to the DigitalOcean database of environmental variables, they're encrypted. Yeah. And they can only be unencrypted on your actual server. So you can do that. I switch between plain text for simple things like staging URLs and callback URLs, things like that, and then encrypt it for things like database or OAuth secrets, things like that.
You know what that Render has? I don't know if other platforms have it, because Render's the only one I've seen that they have environment groups. So you can specify a group of environment variables for an entire like service. And let's say you had serverless functions, right? Or scheduled functions. They probably want to access things like maybe a Mongo URL with the Mongo secret. Well, you can create an environment group, and every single site that's a part of that group gets that environment variable rather than a specific one per service. And then you can override on per service basis. So you can have a group for all your things and then override them where needed. It's pretty nice.
That's really, really nice. I like that a lot, because I'll tell you an issue I ran into just on Friday. I was deploying to Vercel, and Vercel allows you to have production environmental variables, staging environmental variables, and then development environment variables, which is kind of cool, because you can also, you can use Vercel to manage your local variables and then pull them down.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I wasn't using it because I just had a .env file, but I thought it was kind of cool. But you can obviously use them between staging and production and in all of your serverless functions. And we'll talk about front end ones in just a second as well. And then I went to Netlify to do some stuff for my personal website, and I needed to put some variables in there, and they don't have any differentiation between like a preview URL, like someone submits a pull request to my blog and it builds the website, right? They don't have that, the differentiation between that and production. So I had to duplicate a bunch of variables and just tag on underscore staging onto the end of them. And then in my code, I had to like check if we were in production or not. And usually the way that you do that is with process.env.node_env. And then you're only allowed on AWS with serverless functions, you're only allowed 4,096 characters. And I ran out. I ran out of space.
Very specific number. Yeah.
Yeah. And like it's 4 bytes. That's, or four, no, sorry, 4,096 bytes, which is 4,096 characters if you're using just regular characters. Some emojis and things like that are multiple bytes, but just regular characters are. And I ran into an issue because like there's no way to say, okay, these are variables for staging, these are variables for production, these are variables for building my website, these are variables for the serverless functions. It's all just all in one. And I hit that limit and I had to just go back and rename them to be very much shorter variable names, which is a pain in the butt. But like that kind of is the limitation of Netlify, but also it's a hard limit imposed on serverless functions from AWS, which that's plenty if you're able to decide which ones go where. What else? If you want environmental variables in your client side, so in your React application, in your Vue application, in Next.js, in Gatsby, you usually have to name them something special in order to surface them, because you can't be going, say, process.env.database URL on your React application, because that would be a massive security flaw. And if those somehow got into memory or into a config and someone could find them, then you'd be in trouble. So
I think the key thing to emphasize is that anything you send to the client, no matter what, can get gotten by somebody. So if you don't want to get got, you got to not expose any of those secrets on the client whatsoever.
Very, very important thing. So if you do want to expose them to the client, because maybe they are client-side API tokens, like publishable keys, like Stripe is a good example. On Stripe, you get a secret key, which goes on your server, and you get a public key, which goes in your HTML. And if you want to access those public ones on the front end, you have to prefix them with, and I'll give a couple of examples. Create React app is, you have to prefix them with React underscore app. Gatsby, you have to prefix them with Gatsby underscore next. You have to prefix them with next underscore. And that way you are explicitly typing it and you say, yes, I understand that this needs to be available on the client side.
I agree to these terms and services of which you are warning me about.
That's a really, really good way to put it. What else do we have here? There is also host provided variables. So if you want to know, your host will often give you variables of like, what was the git commit that triggered this build, or what branch was used to trigger this build, or who was the person that made this commit. And so you can usually get all the git stuff. You can get in Netlify and Vercel, you can get the URL that is going to be built. So if you need stuff to be specific, if you need to put like a canonical URL or something like that, and you can access via your environmental variable, and those things are dynamic and available to you. The one like weird thing I found, even on my own Gatsby website, is if you want those URLs, again, on the client side, they're not available on the client side. So you have to hot potato them in your Gatsby-node and say process.env.gatsby underscore commit is equal to process.env.commit. And then you explicitly prefix them with Gatsby underscore, and then you're available to get them. What about, like, where do you keep, this is actually a question we had earlier, is like, where do you keep your environmental variables? And we didn't have a good answer. We got a lot of tweets, which was all the same answer.
I keep mine in the private repo. This is where I keep mine.
Yeah. So somebody asked, like, what do you do about, like where do you keep them secretly? And someone like made a script that would like put them in their own folder. A lot of people just said, just put them in one password. And I was like, oh, yeah, obviously.
That's a great idea. Yeah. Especially because our whole team has a one password team account and we share passwords on it already. It's everybody's got it set up and is logged into the team. Might as well hook them up with the ENV variables while you're at it.
Yeah, it would. And there also is a one password CLI tool. It would be so cool if there was like some sort of integration. You could probably keep them as a text note in 1Password and then pull that down from 1Password into a .env file.
I see the wheels turning over there, Wes. Yeah. I see these wheels turning. You got into your chin scratching mode. I was really seeing, what would it take to hook this up to a thermal printer that could print out receipts for me as well?
I think that's about it for all the things. The .env package, that's available in like PHP and in Ruby and all that. The .env docs used to say, don't use multiple .env files. Like only have a .env. Don't have like a .env.local and a .env.production. But I many times have had multiples just so that I can keep them in a file somewhere so I can reference them. Also in Next.js, you have a .env.local, .env.development, and .env.production, and it will pull in.
Yeah, that's how Snowpack works.
Yeah, it'll pull in those different values depending on if you're building it or if you're running it in development mode.
You know what? I don't understand the criticism against having multiple files. Like that's like the famous GitHub issue in the .env npm package in GitHub. There's just like a lot of people having a conversation about whether or not it's appropriate to have different .env files. And to me, it just makes so much more sense to have multiple files rather than to see like development underscore Mongo URL, right? You know, like,
yeah,
I don't know. That to me just doesn't make as much sense, but I get it. There are conflicting or competing ideas here. Another thing I do want to mention too, is that you can set environment variables just in running node scripts, especially if you want to test something, you can just set them right before you run the node or node mon command. So like if you wanted to set an environment variable named thing, it would just be thing equals yo node index.js or whatever file you're running. And that sets that variable on process.env.thing. So like this is probably not something that you'll want to do long term because you'll probably have a lot of these. Not to mention, this is the type of thing that would end up in your package.json file, which again could be harnessing secrets, which you probably would not want to do. But it's an option in case you want to check things quickly or do a quick test.
often the only difference between like building and running in dev mode is if you set the node environment to production or development, right? Mm-hmm. So you'll often see in NPM scripts, somebody will say like node underscore env equals production, and then they run their node command. And there's even a package from Kent C. Dodds called cross env. And I use this in a couple of my courses because this works great. What you just explained works great in Unix environments, but it's awful in Windows. So cross env will just make it work across all the environments in your NPM scripts, which is super nice.
NPM install, make it work.
NPM install, make it work. Yes. Last one I have here is node options. Have you ever used the node underscore options environmental variable?
I've used the hyphen hyphen inspect, and I've used, actually, I take this back. Yes, I have used it for more than just that. I've used it to increase the amount of RAM available in Node. Is that
like memory or something? Yeah.
Yeah. Is because specifically that was, I don't know if I use it anymore. I'm trying to check through my code to see if I still have any of that. There was like a neat little hack that allowed you to increase some of that memory for Meteor, and it made Meteor run a little bit smoother.
Oh.
And I don't see it in here anymore, but I'm pretty sure that's how I did it.
What I've used it for in the past is two things. Is if you set the node options environmental variable before you run your node command, it's the same thing as passing like dash dash whatever argument to your node command. And the reason why that's handy is because sometimes you're not running like node index.js. Sometimes you're running next dev or keystone init, or you're running like these different commands that use node under the hood. If you want to be able to pass flags to them, the most popular one is dash dash inspect. If you want to use Chrome DevTools as your console instead of just the terminal, and that will spin up a little external Chrome DevTools for you. And the other one is if you use the ESM package, this will hopefully not be a thing in a couple of years, but the ESM package will allow you to mix and match your common JS and your ESM. So if you just do node options dash R ESM, what that will do is it will require a package before it runs your node script. And that will allow you to sort of insert some magic before you actually run your code, which is super handy.
Yeah, that is, as somebody who has been really heavy into the ESM world, that is essential bit of knowledge right there.
I think that's about it. It's surprisingly a lot to talk about environmental variables. Like I like had this idea. I was like, we should do a show on environmental variables. And I was like, that's so simple. Everybody knows that. And then I went through a day of just smashing my head on the desk with how difficult some of this stuff can be. There are some best practices and whatnot. So hopefully you enjoyed that.
Yeah, I hope so as well. There's one of those things that everybody's going to deal with, and it's not one of the more fun aspects of everything. So, well, that sounds good. I guess we will see you on Wednesday, where we bring to you an episode on, if Notion ever loads, Notion. Oh, okay, whatever. You're not gonna...
I felt like it was a bit faster today.
I thought it was too until I just tried to load this next one. So the episode on Wednesday is going to be on building your own authentication system, which is something that I have been diving into pretty significantly, given that it's going to be a two-part level up tutorials course for us. So the authentication, a lot of stuff there. So seeing you on Wednesday again, Wes, when I listen to this episode.
All right. Peace.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.